Today we celebrate the Feast of the Holy Family. Now, the fun part of it is we often have challenges with our families. I'm aware of these challenges. We all face them. Families are complicated. They're tough. There's situations we have and whatnot. And so in this way, today's Feast of the Holy Family is a great time for us to reflect on our families and to realize they've always been challenging in every generation. We have two shining examples of families that had significant challenges. The first one is Abraham and Sarah. So we often don't think much about them, but think of it this way. Abraham, according to the Jews, was the father of their faith, the first one to really encounter God, the source of all the covenants. They don't look back to like Noah or Adam and Eve or any of them. It's Abraham who's the starter of it. So in some ways, we can think of Abraham as the founder of Judaism. Could you imagine Abraham being 60 years old, comes home to his wife Sarah and says, "Guess what? I'm going to found a new religion. We're going to change from all of our customs and do something new." How many of you spouses out there would agree with your spouse if that were to happen? Be like, no, let's talk about this. You're nuts right now, we'll figure it out later. Right? It would be stunning for Abraham to come home and tell his wife, "I've encountered God, this is what we're doing." Now here's the challenge. They are wandering nomads. All they do is wander around from place to place where their sheep can graze. So they're already used to wandering around, even in their advanced years. There's no son to inherit the land. There's nothing beyond those two. So once they die, it's over. There's a lot riding on this. So as Abraham comes to experience God and comes to know what he does, Sarah doesn't. She's always kind of in the background of this entire story, trying to figure this out. She doesn't get all the cool revelations. She doesn't get all the signs and whatnot. She has to believe this through Abraham. Even when Abraham comes to her, now 70 years old, and says to her, "You're going to have a son." And she's like, "Yeah, right. That's not how it works. We know how this works." So she laughs. She laughs at what God tells her. And yes, she has a son named Isaac. So there's this dynamic between them that we have to wrestle with, where they are struggling both on the level of faith, how to be cohesive as a family, and even to have a family at all. As things continue, we have some of the big moments. Like today, Abraham's told, "You will have descendants after you. You won't see them, you won't know them, but you just have to trust me." Then, as soon as he has a son, he takes him out to be sacrificed. Do you think Sarah doesn't know what's going on? Sacrifices were always a communal event. Everyone gathered, and she's left at home. I wonder what's going on here. Something strange. So her faith is also tested in the midst of all this. It's a challenge, a great challenge for them, which gives us some credence, some consolation. In the midst of their challenges, our families will probably have challenges too. The great example, however, is the Holy Family. However much we like to picture them as the pristine, perfect family, where everything works out and everything's good, it's not. Let's just be very blunt about this. So let's start out with a basic thing. Where'd they live? Nazareth. Where's Nazareth? Northern Israel. It's the land of Zebulun and Naphtali, two tribes they are not from. Joseph is from the tribe of David, so is Mary. Their ancestral heritage is in the south, in the land of Judah. Why are they in Nazareth? It's a really strange question that no one really has an answer to. But we have one detail that helps us. So they go back because Herod takes a census. So they go back to Bethlehem, his ancestral land, the place he's supposed to be from, where his family resides, and what happens? They don't accept him. There's no room. No one takes them in. They're supposed to by law. This is serious. So what happened that was so bad that for whatever reason they could not go back to their ancestral land but had to live in Nazareth? It's a strange question, but what it does pose for us is there's some family struggles there too. They had family issues with their extended family for whatever reason, what we don't know, that led to the situations in so the prophecies could be fulfilled. But that's just the beginning of it. Not only all the revelations from angels and dreams and stuff that makes them wander all over the place, having to set up camp in Egypt and come back, it's just a chaotic life. Today's gospel is a great example. Here, they're trying to do the right thing, go to the temple, take care of the prescripts of the law, and as soon as they enter the temple, this guy comes in, filled with the Holy Spirit, and said, "Now I can die because I've seen you." Come on, that's got to be somewhat weird. Then he takes Jesus in his hands and said, "Look, here's the Christ. Come on, we just wanted a nice day in the temple. We had to have this? On top of that, after Simeon gives this strange prophecy about how this will be the Messiah to change hearts and all this stuff, we have Anna the prophetess. I don't think we spend enough time with her. She's 84 years old right now. She's probably married at 14, lived 7 years with her husband, making her 21, which means she spent 63 years praying in the temple alone. She has no family. She has no kids. She has no one to care for her. All she does is fast and pray. That's dedication. Incredible dedication. She has been spending her entire life waiting for this moment. You can imagine her level of ecstaticness that here she is finally seeing the Christ she's been waiting for. This is a chaotic moment. There's so much going on. This shows the dynamicism of the Holy Family, that they don't really get to be the nice, happy-go-lucky family we hope. They're constantly inundated with chaos of murderous kings and weird prophets coming to visit them and shepherds coming at the birth. It's just a lot of stuff going on, which gives us another level of consolation. Our families don't have to be perfect. They don't have to be great. They don't have to be this shiny example of all these things. Our families are what they are. And there's a good side to that. As I hear from lots of people who have a nostalgia of the past that say, oh, family values used to be so much better in the past. Families were more cohesive, they got along better, they had stronger values. I find that's not true. Look at Abraham. That's 3,800 years ago, and still they had problems. So the reality is we've always struggled with families. There's always been challenges. And the side of it we forget is that's a good thing. The challenges help us grow. They solidify our faith. They help us grow in virtues. They remind us of the value of forgiveness, of reaching out, and how important it is to have that stability in our life, of family, even if it doesn't go the way we anticipate. So let us not be so concerned about whether our families are perfect, and instead find the good in it. G.K. Chesterton had a quote that I'm going to paraphrase in a moment. His quote was, "We can choose our friends, but God gives us our neighbors." In the same token, however, we can choose our friends, but God gives us our family. We don't get to choose that side of things. And there's a beauty to it we often forget. It brings us joy to know we have those people. It brings us joy to work through the challenges. It brings us joy to know there's someone in the world we're bounded to in a way that's different from everything else. There's a good to that. Herein lies the challenge. Today's families struggle with a lot of different things. As people get older, they separate and they don't really come back together. Or as they're young, we're so busy, there's no real time for family time. Instead, what we end up doing is our family time becomes doing things, like cleaning the house, or chores, or preparing for something. Or we do all these different things that are just necessary and call it family time. That's not family time, that's chores. We need actual family time. And this means that we don't go to technology, we don't go to media, we don't go to all the easy things out there. Because frankly, everyone's trying to make you part of their family. The bank family, the gym family. We just use that word so often, it's almost meaningless anymore. True family activities would be like telling stories. Stories of our family history, stories of things from our past. There's joy in that. Playing games together, spending time singing songs, just being in each other's presence. We should never try and circumvent that with something simpler, but instead enjoy that time. Find something we all enjoy together as a family, and do it so those memories last forever and the bonds grow stronger. Do not be afraid of it. It's fun. There's joy in family life. Another side we often forget is our parish family. Our parish family is not bound by blood or by flesh. It's spiritual. It's something that lasts for eternity. We're all bound together, not just this community here, but across the entire globe as Catholics and Christians. It's an incredible thing. But how much does our parish family mean to us? How often does it matter if somebody leaves or someone joins us? Does that mean anything to us? Does it change our lives? What does it mean to us if someone's struggling, needs some help? Do we want to reach out to them? How often have you called someone from the parish and just chatted, said hi? You know, we're kind of in this together, and we need each other. We need each other more than we think. We need that support. We need that sense of faith. We need someone we can talk to on a faith level, because that's what helps us grow. Our parish family is vital to our good as Christians. We should not dismiss it, but instead find joy in it. You have all these people to support you. And if we really live that well, oh man, the joy that God would give us would be incredible. The graces that flow through us, amazing. So let us take courage. The family is a good thing. It's a source of joy. It's a source of connection. And if we continue to build those bonds and bring the joy of family life to our lives, we will be far more joyful as well and be able to recognize the grace God gives us and the many good things that come through the joy of family.